reading in Ezekiel. I'll probably read a little bit more than we normally do, but the second chapter of Ezekiel. I don't know about you this week, but we looked and on every news station there was the earthquake in Haiti that was just showing the destruction, and just felt such sorrow for those people, and we went to our bedroom to pray, and we opened up our Bible, and we read several chapters here in Ezekiel. It just it opened up to this passage, and I don't know why that was, but anyhow, we heard this week that there was those, or at least one individual had mentioned that that this was God's judgment on Haiti. We know that that I think if you're under 20 years old, if you was like 18, or they've experienced this earthquake, and I forget over four hurricanes that just dearly devastated, and just one natural disaster after another, so that there's even people on the island that says that Haitians are cursed. And we was reading this, and I think that a lot of times we can remember when we see when we see just how we can live all the way out in the sticks, and we still can't get away from modern technology, and yet there's still people today that are starving to death. Still people that in Haiti, when we seen the destruction, I guess they must be a lot like India. Everything's made out of concrete, and I don't think they need very much reinforcement steel in it. And it's just so sad that, you know, if an earthquake came to my house and destroyed my house, and if we survived it, we'd go out in the yard, or we'd get out of the yard, and we seen those little children, and they had toothpaste underneath their nose because the stench of the dead bodies was getting to be such that toothpaste was all they had, I guess. I know that in times past that I've been in some pretty stinky situations, and you can use Vicks and put it underneath your nose, and you can get away. You can get through a lot of stuff you otherwise wouldn't be able to because you can't smell it. But these little children, no older than my own, and they were there with their little black skin, you know, I mean, just as dark as coal, and they had that toothpaste under their nose, and not even a place not even a yard. They didn't have a yard before the buildings fell down. And I think that each and every one of us, there's some in this world that want to be a prophet. Larry Sparks has got a song, and he says, some want to be a prophet, some want to be this, some want to be that. He said, but I want to be like my Jesus. And you know, I think that's what each and every one of us, that ought to be our heart's desire. But because we don't know the mind of God, that when these things happen, when we get a raise at work, when's the last time you heard about somebody getting a raise? Or when we hear about a layoff, or where we hear about a natural disaster in Haiti, or over there in India, where we hear about somebody having a wonderful weather, a bumper crop of wheat. They don't always have to be in the negative, but we ought to ask why. Not why is this happening to me, with the overtone of I deserve better. But Lord, what are you trying to communicate to me today? Lord, why would you bless me to be where I'm at? And say, no hurricane's gonna blow my house down. I don't care if he lived up there in North Dakota, but the Lord can brew one up. But the point being, there ain't none of one of us that knows the mind of God. But this we do know.
that He blesses the righteous, and that the wicked shall suffer. We would like to say, and point our finger in this world, and say this and this blessed, because He's righteous, and this and He's cursed, because He's wicked. But the Bible teaches me that one of the minor prophets said, more or less, why is it that the wicked prosper? The Lord communicated to him as well as us that it's really none of our business, that God is God, and that when it's all said and done, that this is just a preparation place for all eternity. This is, as it were, a waiting room. A lot of people say that this is it. This is all that we can see. That's what about us and around about us. And so we pray, Lord, bless us in this present life with no concern, as it were, of our future. I go when I see this. I go, and I'm going to begin to say that this was God's judgment. For God is a merciful God and long-suffering. And I know myself. No doubt there's people just as wicked in all other nations, and yet we did not see this destruction. But this I know, whether we live in Haiti, whether we live in the United States of America, whether we live in the country of India, or England, or Saudi Arabia, God is coming back, and He said in His holy word that it's appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. So then I could even say, and try to stir you up, and say we need to get on the fire for God. Our lost are dying. I want to tell you something. If you ain't concerned enough with your own soul, I can say all manner. I can look and pray and persuade you and appeal and say, what are your children? But the Bible tells me that it's at everyone's heart's door. Well, the Bible says in the second chapter of Ezekiel, and then we know that Paul touches on it as well. It says, and he said unto me, the Son of Man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak to thee. And the Spirit entered into me, and he spake unto me, and set me upon my feet, that I heard him. And I spake unto me, and he said unto me, listen now. Ezekiel's wanting to get something through to us, that God's talking to him, and that maybe we need to listen to what Ezekiel has to say. And it says, and the Spirit entered into me when he spake unto me and set me up on my feet, that I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, Son of Man, I send thee to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation, that have rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me, even unto this very day. For they are imputed children and stiff-hearted. What's that word mean? Shameless, wanton modesty, bold with contempt for of others. I do send thee unto them, and they shall say unto, and thou shalt say unto them, thus saith the Lord God. And they, whether they will hear, or whether they forbear, for they are rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them. And thou, Son of Man, be not afraid of them, neither be afraid of their words, though briars and thorns be with thee, and thou doest well among scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor be dismayed at their looks, though they be a rebel house, or a rebellious house rather, and thou shalt speak my words unto them, whether they will hear, or whether they will forbear, for they are a most rebellious. But thou, listen, but thou, Son of Man, hear what I say unto thee. Be not thou rebellious like that rebellious house. Open thy and eat that I give thee. And when I look, behold, thine hand was set unto me, and lo, a roll of a book was therein, and he spread it before me, and it was written within and without, and there was written therein the lamentations and mourning and woe. It says up there, and thou wilt speak the words unto them. And then it goes on to say, son of man, hear what I say unto thee, and be thou not, be not thou rebellious, like that rebellious house. Paul said in another way, in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, that I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, unless by any means, when I preach to others, I myself should be a castaway. And then we're going to go on over in the 3rd chapter of Ezekiel. These are the words of God. And sometimes when the Lord speaks, he wants us to share it with others. But there ain't a time when he speaks to us, whether we would share it with others or not, that it's not for us foremost. That when we if it would be revealed to us, and that we were a prophet, to be able to say, behold, the judgment of God, it is for one purpose, and not to say, whoa, unto these that are destroyed, because they stand before their Maker. There is nothing more that can be said or done for those that are dead, but to say, woe to all of those that are still alive, that have breath in their lungs, and blood in their veins, that they too might realize that we will stand before an almighty God. It says in the 3rd chapter of Ezekiel, son of man, I have made thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore, hear the words of my at my mouth, and give them warning from me. When I say unto the wicked, thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked way, to save him, to save his life. The same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Yet if thou warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. Again, when a righteous man doth turn from his righteousness and committeth iniquity, and I lay a stumbling block. But now listen to this. This is the mercy of God. Who can begin to know the mercy of God? We find here that Lord is not only, as it were, long-suffering and merciful to the wicked, and that they that he would not have them to be ignorant, but that even with the righteous, when they would turn from other righteousness, it says, and commit iniquity, and I lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die, because thou hast not given him warning. Oh, I'm sorry, we missed a verse there, but anyhow, in the 20th, and it says, and lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die, because thou hast not given him warning. He shall die in his sin, and his righteousness which he hath done shall not be remembered, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Nevertheless, if thou warn the righteous man, that the righteous sin not, and he doth not sin, he shall surely live, because he is warned. Also thou hast delivered thy soul, and thy hand of, now, and it stops there, and there's a paragraph. So we find that Ezekiel has an obligation that the Lord is sending to a people. He said in the beginning, I don't know if they'll hear you, for they are a rebellious house. Then it says in the 3rd chapter, I'd encourage everybody to read the book of Ezekiel. Yeah, we find that the Lord said, they'll not listen to you, Ezekiel, but you're going to do it. Why are you going to do it? Because I told you. But more importantly, you're going to do it because it's for your good. Because you need not to rebel like that rebellious house. But this message that I'm giving you is not just for the people, but it's for the saving of your own soul. Oh, Rico, the son of man, you got to speak these words. Why? Because of the wicked, though they might not hear you, there is the righteous. And you need to warn them as well, because it'll be required at your hands. And then he goes on to say, and that Ezekiel was to go to his house, and that he was to shut his mouth and speak not a word except what the Lord would say. He said, not in other words, you not to correct them in their words. If you'd want to read the remainder of that chapter, it says, and I will make thy tongue cleave to the roof of thy mouth, in the 26th verse, that thou shalt be dumb and shalt not be to them a reprover, for they are a rebellious house. But when I speak with thee, I will open thy mouth, and thou shalt say unto them, thus saith the Lord, he that heareth, let him hear, and he that prepareth, let him prepare, for they are a rebellious house. We find the natural progression when one rebels, how the Lord deals with the hearts of man. When a nation rebels, how it is that it is spoken to them with all clarity. Then the Lord, as it were, shuts the mouths of the prophets and the preachers, except for at poignant times where he would open their mouth. Then the next, in the fourth chapter, the Lord begins to tell Ezekiel to go out and play in the dirt. That's more or less what he's telling him. He says, you get a towel and you build it up as if it were Jerusalem. Then he says, an iron pan. Ezekiel's out there playing in the dirt. This is a man that warned the people time and time again, and they heard him not. Maybe there was those that were standing, as it were, in the door of opportunity, just beginning, as it were, maybe what Ezekiel saying's true. Maybe what he said is from the Lord. And then they see him out there playing in the dirt, building up the fences against the city. And what an odd and peculiar way to express the fate of a nation, and the toil and the destruction that was coming. But it doesn't stop there. And the Lord says, Ezekiel, I want you to lay on your left side, and for the number of years, a day for the number of years, 390, I want you to lay on your left side. You're going to make what we call Ezekiel bread, but you're going to make this bread out of this sprouted, and it lists the wheat and the barley and the lentils and the millet and the beans, and you're going to make this bread from it. And you're going to bake it with a human dung. And Ezekiel said, Lord, I've never come in all my years. I never come in contact with the dead or anything that's unclean. Please don't make me defile myself by handling human waste. And the Lord said, all right, you can make it with cattle dung. And you know what? There he was. A man of God, no doubt a lot of people looked at and was falling, sitting outside, not in his right mind, playing in the dirt, like a child would with army men, playing in the dirt, lying on his side. When they come and go through the city, they say the man laying there, making his bread, with the dung of animals. They would have said, see this, the future as it was being played in the dirt, and they turned their back
I'm about to tell you and wring my hands and see lamentation and woe that these things are going to come to pass. That you're going to see your children. You're going to see your children out in sin and destroy. That you're going to see this nation fall. That you're going to see these things and that. But listen, if you ain't concerned for your own soul, what's it matter? You could die tomorrow. Your child could grow up and be the president. Or he could be a mass murderer. And you'll not know. But I'm telling you, the judgment. So what would it take to persuade you if everlasting damnation and the devil's hell won't get you to move? And we said, and we look at it as a man playing in the dirt, and would say, I would almost believe that. It come with up from a guy that was a little bit more educated. Oh, they come from a guy that didn't have chin whiskers. They come from a guy that wasn't born in North Carolina. They come from a guy that wasn't my brother. Or wasn't my neighbor. Or wasn't my fellow citizen. And on the list could be. But the matter of the fact is, you won't believe because it requires something of you. Servitude always does. People are looking for a Savior. It's really sad. But maybe that's just the mentality of city folks. The guy at work, we was talking. And you know, I always poke fun at people from the city. And granted, that name's not a city, but there's a lot of people that's come from big cities. And you know, there's just a lot of, well, if you don't understand that people from the country look at people from the city a little bit different, now you might have the understanding of that it's based on a race maybe. Or it might be based on a person from that you're poking fun at people on the East Coast since there's a lot of cities out there, or that you're poking fun at people on the West Coast because there's a lot of cities out there. But you know what? There's different dynamics if you live in the city versus someone in the country. You know, and I don't know why that is. Maybe because when you're in the city, things are a little bit different. You have somebody. We can just even look out in the suburbs. We live in such a messed up world. Years ago, men would work out on the farm. I can remember back in the 80s when I worked at a machine shop and they bought a lady from the little island of Taiwan. They showed in the literature. They showed a picture of their factory. And you know, where I was working at the time was in a business air park. There was an airstrip. And there was businesses on both sides of it. Up and down the highway. And for the most part, there was somebody employed. I can remember when I first started working at the machine shop. I was working part-time. One of my jobs was to mow the lawn. But we looked out there. Or we looked in that literature. And over in that industrial park over in Taiwan, nobody was mowing the grass. You know why? Because the grass wasn't a manicured lawn. But you see these factories in this industrial park. It was light industry, not heavy industry. The great big buildings. And instead of having a yard, there was rice paddy fields there. They were growing their crops right there. That no, at least in the picture that we could see, that no land went to waste. Instead of having somebody employed to mow the yard, that land was being cultivated. But yet today, we see it. Where people shell out money to join the fitness club, and they go. They pay some boy to push mow their lawn. When they go and pay somebody exercise equipment. That's the biggest kind of foolishness. They ought to save their money and push mower their own yard. But that is some. That's the differences sometimes between the city and the country. You live in the city and you gotta pay somebody to haul off your trash. You pay somebody to give you water. You know, we was, it got cold. And the pipes froze underneath our house. Oh, we was a little concerned. Were they going to freeze in the well house? And Darryl didn't call up. He didn't call up the city waterworks. Why? Because he has his own well. Instead, he called up the landlord. My father. I said, we left going to work. I told my dad, I said, could you turn the heater on underneath there? But when we come home, we realized that there were some things that needed to be done. But I said all that to say, in natural disasters, Darryl was to wait out in the community when we had the ice storm. There was people out in the country that was without power for a long time, much longer than in town. And it just made sense, because I understood that if you patch some wires up in town, there's going to be a lot more people with power. And so people in the city are used to so many of their modern day conveniences being provided, and they don't think of it no thought. If they rent a home, a lot of these things are included in the rent. I know of a couple that rent some property, and when they first started out, I don't think they had trash pickup. You had to pay extra for that. But after having a few of their tenants live in a house almost a year and throw all their trash in a spare bedroom, they realized the smart thing to do was that to charge everybody for trash pickup. And hopefully they'll use it. Somebody thought they was getting around it, weren't they? I don't have to pay for trash pickup. I've got a spare bedroom. I mean, that's ignorant. I don't see how people can live like that, but they do. But you know what? There are so many modern conveniences that have been provided for us each and every day that used to was directly provided by God. They still are. But see, we're so far removed from it, we don't realize it. You know, I've been reading up on growing corn. And that corn is a wonderful plant. Though it takes a lot out of the soil, you know, there is no other grain that will produce on fertilized or unfertilized land like corn will. It just boggles your mind to think about how much is spoken about. A lot of people don't realize it. Because some farmer says, I got 150 bushel of corn. I averaged that an acre. Do you realize how much that is? A bushel is roughly 56 pounds. Do you realize how many tons that is off of 1 acre? But years ago, if you was getting 60 or 70, you were doing really well. There was years that you didn't. Because of drought, because of pestilence, that there was years that you didn't have enough seed. You didn't have enough corn to get you through the winter, and then seed corn to plant in the spring. And we're far removed from that. We'll go to the store and we gripe because the price of rice or the price of this or that's a little bit higher. And we don't even know why. And we say it's because the grocery store's getting greedy. We say it's because of this or because of that, and we don't realize what it is. But can you imagine looking into your corn crib? It's just a farmer, you know, I guess there's been some that's made the attempt.
to keep the rodents out of the corn. But what little bit we've been reading about it, that a farmer pretty much just surrenders and realizes that so much of it is going to do, what you try to do is you try to protect it the best you can, but so much of it, the rodents or the mice is just, they're going to get it. My father mentioned about a man that lined his whole corn crib in rat wire, and that there were several witnesses that even said that there wasn't a whole nowhere. I was there when he lined it with rat wire before the corn, but yet that man filled it with corn and he had a good door on it, and there was mice running around there. I got it overhead, all around it, on the bottom, and the man had come to the conclusion that the little that the mama mice backed up and had the baby to squish the babies through the water. Oh, you know, they had to get water somehow. They was coming and going. I don't know where it was, but with that being said, how frustrating would it have been to go to all that trouble and see them? That'd make you go crazy. That's why most farmers have surrendered to the fact that the rodents are going to get some corn, and you just got to accept that, because you go crazy like a fox. I wish you had one. How you going to kill these mice? But I said all that to say, but can you imagine? I'm standing in a corn crib and wondering, counting out the kernels, as it were. If I have another crop failure like I had this year, what am I going to do? I don't have enough to plant. I planted it, and you're in a third year of drought, and I planted 100 bushels of corn. I just don't have. I'm sorry, I said 100 bushels. But I planted 5 bushels of corn, and I didn't get hardly nothing. And look at all I've got, and trying to decide, shall I save it for seed corn, or shall my family go hungry? And that would cause a man to do a lot of thinking, would it not? Because a man, he knew anything about God, and humble to cry out to Him. But what do we see today? This man doesn't provide for himself with his own hands anymore, even when he does. It's so far removed from him. I've got a good job the Lord's blessed me with. We're going to be going through some shared work. But you know what? Years ago, I can remember, I used to get a paycheck. And I was always excited. When I was a teenager, I started working in a machine shop when I was 16 years old. And I was always excited because I really didn't. I kept track of my time, but a lot of times I didn't add it all up. So I didn't know exactly, because my hours would fluctuate, and a lot of it was work all the time you can work. And so I was always looking forward to that check. You know, it had been nice when I was a kid, and I can remember painting fences for Roy Gordon Reed was his name, and me and my sister, I can remember we would paint the trim on his house, and I painted the board fences, and he didn't have a going rate. He just paid you whatever was in his pocket. So as a kid, it was cash. As a kid, he's always excited. I can remember one time in particular, I was painting fences pink, and he expressly told me he bought this pink paint at a discount store. He wanted the front side of the fences white. We're going to use this cheap paint on the back side. So that sounds pretty easy, don't it? Except when you got a square log on the hillside. Because the back side begins to be the front side at some point from the road. Because it wasn't sitting adjacent to it. So, you know, as a kid, you thought, well, that's pretty easy. One side's this and the other side's that. But when it's sitting on the county corner, well, it ain't. You painted the white this side, white on this one, and that was over there, and it got confusing. But any
anyhow. I can remember paint with him for him all week. I thought I'd done a good job. I can remember painting the white side first. And then painting the peak and some of the peak running on the wire. And discovering I had to save myself from coming back. And covering up the peak and run on the white side. I better paint the peak first. And for a kid that was about 11 years old, that was a lot in my mind. I wanted to do a good job. Because after all, I didn't know why I was getting paid. And I knew if he wasn't pleased, it wouldn't be near as enough. And I can remember, I wish I remembered what it was. It wasn't very much money. And I went up there on payday. And he handed me some bills. You know, I worked all week and I think it might have been $20-some. I think there was a 20 in there. And I was so happy. And I put that in my pocket. And I mean, I was thinking, boy, I'm going to get rich painting fences. I wish this guy'd buy more pink paint because it's cheap and that leaves him more money to give me. And you know what? That showed me the value of work. You work, you got some money. You go spend that money. And then Daryl got a machine shop job. And you work for a week and you pay your paycheck. Oh, it wasn't cash to run and spend the first place you could go. You had to go to the bank, so open up a bank account. And I lived with my parents, and I had some bills, but you know what? I budgeted myself, and then all of a sudden, we didn't get paid every week. It's every 2 weeks. And so, all right. We moved out here and went back to every week, and I thought that's pretty good. So we worked at Gen X, and then it was every other week. Then we moved back to working in a machine shop, back to once a week. Then we were notified, you're not going to get a check anymore. We're going to deposit that in the bank. And you know what? There's a lot of men that was upset about that. Because their wife worked. Their wife knew what they made on 40 hours, and as far as their wives knew, 40 hours is all they ever worked. And they take that extra money. They take that check and they deposit that 40 hours in there. And they had a lot of play money. They were really upset until they discovered that you could have your 40 hours put in one bank account and you could have the rest of it put in another. In savings. Or another bank account. And you know what? I used to, when I took off on Friday, I had to play and told it. Because that's when I handed the checks in. If we was going to do something on the weekend, I had to realize that I wasn't going to get my check till Monday unless I stopped in there. But you know what? That's one of the conveniences, isn't it? Having direct deposit. We're on shared work now, and I wasn't in at work Friday, that early Thursday. Didn't matter to me that I wasn't going to be there for my check. So my check was deposited. My wife called the bank and she knew exactly how much it was when they put it in there. But there's men at work week after week and you don't get that exchange, do you? Before you know it, if you ain't careful, you're just working and you don't see the value of it. And like I said, people in the city, they just have direct deposit and they have direct withdrawal. They're just like a little mouse on a wheel. They just run, and sometimes it just seems like they can't run fast enough. And they hope enough money's in there. And the government provides this for them, and the government provides that for them. And when the prices begin to go up, whether it's taxes, or whether it's the fees at the bank or anywhere else, they don't really see the direct effect that every morning when they get up, they put their feet on the floor, that it's a blessing from God. That with every factory that has a layoff, and they still got their job, that it's a blessing from God. That every time that they go to the grocery store, and they gripe about the fact, did you see flowers went up again? That because it's on the shelf, it's a blessing from God.
And that maybe I'm going to not be able to drive as often. Gas is going up because I got to buy this or that. And they have to shuffle money around. But when it's all said and done, they've got food on their table. And it's a blessing from God. But yet they're so far removed from it. And when it begins to fall apart, who do they blame? I can remember when I was a kid. You didn't hear cursing on television like you do now. All this, it was starting. I can remember in particular, I don't remember what year it was. It was back in the 80s sometime. And there was, the Mississippi was flooding. And I grew up in a home, everybody knows it, where I went to church and had a pastor, which was my grandfather, that when trouble happened, granddaddy's attitude was not, oh, why is it happening? But it was more or less, Lord, what do you want to show me by this? He'd preach about sin and that what sin will cost you and that destruction's coming. And Darrell understood that when bad things happened, or even in the good, Darrell should ask the Lord, Lord, what would you have me to know by this? And we was watching the television one night. There was an elderly man, I don't know, in my mind I was young. I would say that he was probably in his 50s. My first response would be to say that he was in his late 60s or maybe in his 70s. But you know, when you're younger, old people were a lot younger than they are now when I'm pushing 40. My wife was complaining last night. She's turning 31. She's saying, I'm starting to get these aches and pains and I don't want to get older. And I was wanting to tell her, honey, that you get your second wind when you get 36. But I couldn't tell her that. I was wanting to tell her, you know, that, oh, honey, but when you're 39, it's a whole lot better. But it don't. I was talking to my dad about some issues that I have. And my dad, I love him dearly, but he was acting like he was, I was talking to one of my peers. He says, you know, I have that trouble too. No, that's my point. That's my point. That's my worry. I couldn't say that. I'm saying it out loud. I says, well, what's wrong with your elbows? You go, you know, well, what happened? You know, like, I didn't do it playing football. You know what? I've done a lot of this over my life. I've done that. I guess if you looked over my working since I was 16, I know I've averaged over 40 hours a week. There was a stint there for over 10 years. I probably averaged over 50 hours a week. A lot of it's doing that. It hurts me, so why am I doing it? Doing it because that's what I do. Riding there, oh, it just kills me. It's getting worse. Some days are worse than others. I look at the face of my children, and my wife was boo-hooing because she's 31. Well, you know what? I'm going to be 40 this year. And when I do the math of how old, if the Lord wouldn't bless us, and it would be a blessing, honey, and you know it. But if we don't have any more children, how old I'll be when Charlene's 18 years old. But you know what? Darrell can sit. Darrell, he can feel sorry for himself. But he'd do a lot better to sit down for a little bit. Say, Lord, what do you want me to know? My wife complains about a shoulder hurting her. And you know, I have to say, honey, you do get your second wind because so about 3 years ago, my shoulder starts to fall. I don't know how you sleep in bed, but I got to sleep on my side. I go from one side to the other. I sleep on my back when my back's bothering me. But I just can't sleep sound there. And my wife, maybe, she don't want me to sleep sound there because I really do some snoring that way. But apparently I snore on my side. I think that's the worst I said on my head. But you know, I got my point that this one shoulder, I'd wrecked the four-wheeler and flipped it. Actually, yeah, I didn't flip it, but I ran for a little bit before my feet just couldn't keep up. You know, you jump off and you can't run at 45 miles an hour except for about two or three steps. And I rolled up and landed on this one shoulder. And you know, I couldn't sleep on that side because I'd wake up and just get to hurt me so bad and it'd pop. So I started sleeping on my left side. That was my right side. But you know what? I can't sleep all through the night just on my one side because my shoulder would get to killing me. I could distinctly remember going to the bar and saying, Lord, you know, I need a good night's sleep. Lord, help me. This is my cross to bear. Lord, help me sleep on my back. Help me be able to sleep on my stomach. And you know, it bothers me sometimes, but it don't bother me near as much as it once did. And I'm older than I was then. And I know that I serve a God that's able to hear. I know that I serve a God that He wants the wicked to know when they transgress Him. I serve a God that He not only wants the righteous to know when they transgress Him, but He wants to know the righteous to know as they walk in their righteousness the consequences of transgressing Him. I like what it says about when a righteous man turns from his righteousness and I place a stumbling block before him. Oh, what would we do if when we failed the Lord, if He just let us go all our merry ways and you've made your decision? I'm all right with you. Daryl, you're born in a Christian home. You don't matter. Daryl, I gave you opportunity after opportunity. You know what? You know the price of sin. But He places there stumbling block. The step of my toe caused me to not be able to sleep at night. That's a good thing. So it would do us well. And when we want to sit down, feel sorry for ourselves, that maybe we ought to stretch out and lay on our left side for a little bit. Like Ezekiel. I don't know how old he was when the Lord told him to lay on his left side for 390 days and to rise up, to squat by a fire and to cook that bread with animal dung. I don't know how old he was, but I know that in the sun, that in the cold, we know it was over a year that he was discomforted, but he done it. Why? So that the people's heart could turn to the Lord. No, so that Ezekiel might know who God was. He'd already communicated to Ezekiel that they weren't going to listen. But he did it anyway. It's a scary thing to think, ain't it? That destruction was coming. I mean destruction. I've heard this here of late. Destruction of biblical proportions. So obviously it being in the Bible, one could say that. But that a whole nation was going to be led away captive for a period of time that you really could have. I don't know. In modern history, I don't know if you'd even, if a nation was destroyed and 300 and some years later, they were united back in that, to that land and tied back to that land. You could really even say it's the same nation. But that the Lord would communicate to people by man, as it were, building sandcastles in the dirt. doing that which was esteemed by everybody to be unclean. I wonder how many people looked at him and said, oh, Ezekiel lost his smile. He used to be a prophet of God. Look at him. What would they have said of him if he'd have used human dung? Cook his bread. What would they have said of him? I could tell you what they'd say of him. They might look at him and say, look, the judgment of the Lord's on that man. He used to be one of the prophets that was esteemed and regarded highly. And look, he's living out underneath the stars. Don't have brains enough to realize what he's doing is displeasing God. So they go on their way to sacrifice, make sacrifices to the God of Israel, and they're on their way out of town to make sacrifices at the idol of Baal. Each and every one of us, we have an obligation to our own soul to find out what the Lord's will is for our lives. Over and over again in the Bible, it's more or less to tell us to love righteousness, to eschew evil, to shun it, to flee from it. You know, I know of a lot of people that want to know the will of God. But they must be willing to sit in the dirt. I said, Darrell, that's a really weird analogy. Because I'd say most people are right down there in the hog pen today. Listen to me. Sometimes it's in the stillness of the night that the Lord speaks to us. Sometimes it's in our discomfort that He reveals to us just how needy we are. And in understanding that we're needy, we become more thankful. I know of this woman, and I don't know if there's any reasons at all. I know she's a troubled soul now, but years ago, she communicated to my wife. She just couldn't go to sleep without a television playing. She always had to have a television playing. And she'd left that television play all night. There was another woman, another one of my wife's relatives. I'd drive by when I got off of work late at night. And I knew her relative worked for a living. Worked a day job, and I'd come by there, and it'd be 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Sometimes it'd just be midnight. Depending on our workload at work, and I'd drive by there, and I could tell by the flickering in the windows, you know how it looks when the television's playing. I thought, boy, that woman, she must have, what they call that, can't sleep at night. But you know what? I think she just was another one of them people. Put their head down, gets a little sleepy in the chair, or they lay down at the couch. But you know what? That might be an effective way to go to sleep or even stay asleep. But how is the Lord going to speak to you? If you was a Christian, and the Lord would choose to speak to you as He did Samuel, how would you hear the words? Well, Darrell, obviously God's bigger than that. Oh, and He absolutely is. The Lord can shout at us if He wants to. But my point is, so many times we want to know the will of the Lord. The Lord has told us in certain simple terms. And we're laying there, you're going to turn that television off. And we drift off to sleep.